Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Brooklyn-based jazz pianist Luke Marantz. We got into his new 2026 album Echoes and his life in the world of jazz. Teamed up with guitarist Simon Germain, they make a set of duets on a mesmerizing and atmospheric new album. It epitomizes their genre-defiant sound that has evolved together over the past decade with contributions by drummer Josh Dion. Luke has been described by NPR as amongst the best young American jazz pianists out there. Equally adept at piano or synthesizer, his musically organically combines jazz and improvisation with elements of electronic music, contemporary classical, and post-rock. From his roots in Dallas to Boston and now in Brooklyn, we get into it all. Enjoy this interview. Well, I'm looking forward to getting into the music, so thank you for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. And I always begin this first question because it's such a big deal, you know, kind of as a precursor of getting into the album. You know, 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing the world, changing all of us, especially the jazz community. How did you get through that era, and how has it influenced your creativity and the way that you do things today?
Boy, well, I mean, one thing that happened for me during that time is that I didn't. So I'm originally, even though my dad is from here and I grew up coming to New York, I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, right between Dallas and Fort Worth. And at the beginning of all this, I mean, I think most folks that had any sort of capacity to leave or go somewhere else, certainly there was a lot easier than it was here in New York. Dallas was definitely one of those places they left. And I kind of did everything I possibly could to stay, and I did stay for the entire time. But it became immediately clear to me. I mean, it was very important that I wanted to be part of the building up process that was going to happen here again. I mean, very early on, the Jazz Standard closed and the 55 Bar closed, and it was just clear that, you know, things were going to be pretty different moving forward. And to be honest with you, Joe, I actually almost didn't make it. I kind of had eyes on leaving at the end of like 2022 zone, because it just didn't feel like, I mean, it had been, I mean, at least when I was starting to think about it, it had been a little over 2 years at that point, and it just kind of didn't feel like things were going to come back, and things had just gotten so expensive here again. And but I mean, things changed, and when they did start changing, they changed really quickly. And I think for me, I don't know. I think it was kind of the young influx of people. I mean, at that time, I was kind of mostly playing with people that were older than me, and folks in my generation. And I think the big thing that changed it, both musically and personally, and in my relation to the scene, and I think in just kind of what's happened here, young people just kind of didn't want to let it die. I mean, a lot of the new clubs that are popping up are started by young folks, and I mean, yeah, everything from the clubs to the actual music that's happening. I think it's like the younger generation that, I mean, certainly not, this is not to discount the older folks that have stayed or, you know, the established history and everything, but I think that's kind of always been the case in New York. You know, like before I lived here, I lived in Boston, and Boston is the most transitory place that I've ever been. You know, people go to school there and then they leave, and I tried to stay there, cause I liked it so much. But I lived there for 2 years, and by the time that time was over, I didn't really know anybody who lived there anymore. So when I came to New York, I think I thought that this was sort of a more stable place, and what I've come to realize that it's just as transitory, it's just sort of a slower burn, you know? Some people do stay here forever, but most of them, if you talk to them about it, didn't really mean to, you know? 20 years just went by, and now they're still here.
Yeah.
But most people, I mean, it's sort of a place that you come when, you know, you can deal with it, which usually means like in your 20s, I think. And then if it makes sense to stick it out, you know, you do. But for the most part, people end up leaving. I mean, even just thinking about like Kansas City, some of the younger musicians that, like, do you know who Logan Richardson is?
Oh, yeah. By chance? Oh, yeah. He's one of our golden childs. Yeah,
totally. He was one of the people that really inspired me to move here. And I think him and a lot of folks from his generation, there's a guy named Tommy Crane, who's a really great drummer that is on a lot of Logan's earlier records and grew up with Logan, actually. He now lives in Montreal, but he and Logan were both like childhood heroes for me, and were a big part of the reason why I wanted to move here. But I was talking to Tommy about it recently, just kind of asking him if he keeps in touch with anybody that lives here, and he named like two or three people. It's just kind of, at least from his generation.
Yeah.
Just kind of the nature of this place, I think, you know, it turns around. So, Yeah, maybe I sort of went in some different directions there, but.
No, I love that assessment of the cities. I haven't heard that before about even Boston, but it makes sense because you got Berkeley and the New England Conservatory. I mean, you have these places that people come into, but I don't hear a whole lot of a plethora of clubs from Wally's, and there's a couple others here and there. But I
Yeah.
think about Kansas City in that same vein, and Kansas City has become a place where people are staying, and even people are coming in. Like Adam Larson came here, and
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
so there's been kind of a bevy of cats. There's been some other older musicians. Michael Carr was out in California. He's been around for a long time,
nice.
and he moved here. And there's been some others that have just been like, they came here just to see what's up, and they were blown away by how many clubs, because every night the nightly rundown in Kansas City is pretty voluminous.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely Logan. Logan came back and headlined a big Prairie, it's the Prairie Village Jazz Fest. It's in September, and it's one of our biggest fests. And he
Awesome.
headlined it about 3 years ago. I've seen him at the Blue Room. So whenever he comes back in, the red carpet's flying out, and everybody's ready.
Yeah,
So
that doesn't surprise me at all.
that's cool. So let's get into the new album Echoes before we, and then we'll get into kind of your career in earnest. Talk to me about this new project and what you were going for, and what it feels like on a visceral level.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's interesting that you started with the pandemic because I feel like, like you said, it's kind of a long time ago now. But I mean, this record. So it's a record. It's really a duo record, even though it's under my name. It's also under a guy named Simon German's name, who is an amazing guitarist and bass player. Simon also, I mean, speaking of people who inspired me to move here, was one of those people. I mean, I met Simon when I was still living in Boston. I came up to New York to play a gig, and Simon was on it, and just in talking to him after, I just kind of realized, like, I mean, even as we bonded over really liking 16th century music, and I don't know, I think as much as I'm so grateful for my time in Boston, I mean, Dallas, all these places that I've lived, I hadn't really found my, like, community of musicians that I felt like, oh, these are the people that I want to be making music with. And even people like Tommy and Logan and but certainly Simon, I mean, just I think that was the aesthetic that I was always most interested in being part of. And so anyway, yeah, Simon was one of those people that I was like, okay, I want to move to New York and be around musicians and artists and thinkers like this. But Simon, he lived in New York for 12 years. He'd already been living there, I guess, for 4 years at the time that I met him. But he, it wasn't, the pandemic certainly sped up the process, but he was already planning on leaving maybe a year before the pandemic happened. And he moved to Berlin. But I think it was still important for him to come back and try and keep the connection going that he had with all the musicians that he played with here, and also just with this place and the energy of it. So we would come back here and there, and my brother and I have a recording studio space that we built together. It's kind of been in all sorts of different iterations and parts of the city, but we currently have it in South Brooklyn. It's kind of the one bright shining light of the pandemic is that rent around here got a lot cheaper.
Yep.
I think we assumed that we'd never be able to do something like this in New York proper. We were looking in New Jersey and like deep, deep South Brooklyn and like Queens and various places. And but yeah, things got cheap enough that we were able to get this place and build the studio in it. And the first project that we really started working on in earnest was this record with Simon. And it wasn't even initially, I don't think we thought it was going to be a record at the start of it. We just wanted to kind of, it was just a way to keep our musical relationship going. Whenever he was in town, we would just record something, but it became clear very quickly that it was going to actually, become a full-fledged, record, especially, we started adding drums and there's so many layers on the thing, but it was a 3 year long process. And I think, I mean, it was happening all during the pandemic. And it was sort of a way, I think, to, as the world in New York and my personal and musical and otherwise our relationships were changing all around me, it was sort of a way to keep things centered. Like I said, Simon was one of those people that I was like, oh, kind of what I want to do and be around is playing with people like this. And so, yeah, really, it's as much as it, the process became more and more of a record. It felt more like a lifeline in the midst of it all than anything else.
So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
Well, I think for me, with making records, I mean, I've only made two records under my own name. I have a solo piano record that's called Embers. That's actually structured very similarly to this record. I mean, it sounds a lot different because it's solo piano, and this one has there's piano on it, but most of the piano has like some sort of vect. I like to do live electronics, and when I'm playing acoustic piano now. There's like lots of synths and Rhodes, and like every instrument that I own is on this record. There's a lot of production and so on and so forth, but I think it's still spiritually got a lot in common with my first record, and I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that narrative is really important to me with music. Also really into movies, and I like to film things myself, and so, you know, I don't necessarily want to put my own projection of like what the story of the record is to me. I hope that you know, sort of the through line, certainly of like the echoes. I mean, even the way that those were recorded, you know, there's like a 1, 2, 3, and 4 echoes. Simon, I think one of the reasons that I related to him so much initially was that I didn't just feel a kinship with playing with him and with talking to him, but it was really the way that he approaches music as a composer. I felt like I immediately understood. Sometimes you play people's music and it's like, I don't know, I mean, this might sound really pretentious, but like the first time that I played Schumann's music, I remember just feeling like, oh, it was at a time that I wasn't really a very good reader. That was like in high school. But I just felt like I could read it without really having to try that hard, you know? It just felt like, oh, it's like physically and emotionally and musically, just the way this looks even, I just feel like I kind of understand it. And I felt very similarly to Simon's music. And yeah, the way those echoes were recorded is Simon essentially just improvised each one of those pieces. Some of them are like little song forms. Like Echoes 2 is basically like you could write that down and it would be like an ABA song. But yeah, I think that sort of feeling of being able to listen to someone else and sit in their sort of sound world and draw your own conclusions, you know? Yeah. Like I'm reading a book right now called The Employees that I feel like it's like each page is, some of them are 2 or 3 pages, but each page is essentially like a little excerpt of an interview with an employee on this like futuristic ship. And it's an experience that I haven't had in some time that I think I would hope that folks would have with this record of just that it feels like even though it's not direct, it feels like it's speaking into all of these different things that are happening in my life. Like even just various like movies or things that I've seen recently or conversations that I've had or stuff I've been thinking about, it just like, you know, gets in there and points me in like a particular direction that or perspective that maybe I hadn't thought of before. Yeah, I would hope that something similar would happen.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that book that, and I keep thinking Zig Ziglar, but it's not him. There was a guy that wrote a book and he interviewed all these people and it was like a cross-section of employment of like America, of what people were doing. He's got such a unique name. It's going to come to me at a weird time, but it reminds me of that idea of having a snapshot. Like there was a, you know, a police officer or a guy that worked in a mine in West Virginia. He went all across the country and he just interviewed and it was a pretty groundbreaking look into it. Anyways, it'll come to me, but I think about what you're talking about there about kind of something futuristic. But which is weird because we're entering AI and the future is, you know, for all of that's weird. So, take me back to your beginnings. How did the piano, how did jazz, how did all of this become who you are? Are you originally from Dallas?
Yep. I grew up about 20 minutes outside of Dallas. And first 10 years of my life, we lived in a place called DeSoto, Texas. And then we moved to where my parents still live, a place called Cedar Hill. And like I said before, it's sort of right in between Dallas and Fort Worth. But I tell people I'm from Dallas because I went to high school in Dallas. There's like an arts high school that's there, that my dad happens to teach at, or he did. He recently retired, but he taught at the Arts Magnet High School there in Dallas for 32 years. And my mom taught at the Dallas Baptist University. They're both musicians. My dad's a jazz trumpet player. My mom's a classical pianist. And my mom still plays in the church. But yeah, that's certainly how it started. I mean, my parents actively, my brother is also a musician, professional musician, amazing saxophone player, and they both actively discouraged us from becoming professional musicians. But it was just kind of too, I mean, yeah, I can remember experiences early on, just like sitting on the piano bench with my mom or under the piano when she would play. She's got a really sort of emotional but also very like bombastic way of playing. She's a very petite woman. She can't really quite reach an octave, and yet she's just got so much power. And I can just remember feeling overwhelmed to the point that like I would try and play with her, and I could hardly play just from laughing so much. You know, the sort of like visceral kind of joy that I felt very early on. It just felt like it was clear, kind of always, what I was going to do. But finding piano, I mean, I started on piano when I was, I think I can't even remember when I first started lessons, 4 or 5 or somewhere in that range. But I did a lot of other stuff in the midst of it. I played saxophone for 10 years. I was really serious about visual art and acting and baseball and tennis and all sorts of things. But I did, and I always played piano in the midst of all that, but I didn't really get serious about it until I was like 14. And at that point, I felt like I was really far behind. So I kind of quit everything else and exclusively focused sort of in what I think is a very important time in my life, but also a pretty unhealthy way on only practicing piano.
So before we get into the first show that you ever saw, the first seminal live jazz show that you saw that blew you away, I just wanted you to know that I had to find this out. It was Studs Terkel. It was called Working.
Wow.
Yeah, it
Okay.
was.
I definitely, it rings a bell. And also, I feel like it's, there's a Ludwig Wittgenstein quote. I can't remember what the name of the place is. I think he's teaching at Oxford at the time. And it's the equivalent of like a UK, like Walmart or something, you know? And he's like, he's talking to his philosophy students and he's like, if you want to understand philosophy, get a job at this place, like get a job at Walmart, essentially, you know? And I feel like there's, yeah, just in relation to what we were talking about, it's like, that's like this record for me was like, it couldn't have been the process of making it and what we were doing. And it couldn't have been further from like career stuff. I think it's the furthest I've ever felt from that in my life, just because none of like this just wasn't happening here, you know? It was unclear whether it was going to come back, and if it did, what it would look like. It felt more like just kind of like holding on to this thing that sort of more and more clearly revealed itself as being like a necessity in my life, you know? I always knew that I loved music and that I had this, you know, special connection to it, and that I always wanted to do it, but I think the sort of like need to do it, sort of on a level that had to do, you know, with like, yeah, more basic necessities in life, you know, like working because you need to live or whatever, you know, that's what a lot of that felt like to me. So,
Do you remember the first live show that you saw, the first live jazz show that blew you away?
I mean, definitely the first live jazz show that I ever saw was my dad's band, and he would let me come on stage and like shake maracas with his band. And he was very, you know, my dad likes a big production. So he was always kind of, wherever he lived, he was always trying to put on like some kind of jazz festival or like get something like that started and bring in folks. So it always felt sort of like big and exciting and flashy. But, certainly, I know you didn't ask this, but I mean, certainly the first recording experience I remember was Oscar Peterson plays Count Basie. that was just like immediately, I was a little kid and I like took the record in and learned to like sing along with the whole thing just because I, but yeah, man, the first concert, I feel like at the first one that I remember just kind of really actively changing my life was seeing Pat Metheny live. That was really just, which I mean, speaking of Kansas City, but that was just like it was a sound because my dad, Pat Metheny played on his senior recital, so I just kind of grew up in a house that like he had all of Pat's records and used to talk about Pat a lot, and so I kind of just I felt like I had this connection with him before I, and it's just. I mean, my brother and I, we used to play a video game together in his room. We would turn the sound off and we put on Bright Size Life, and it was somehow like the perfect soundtrack
Wow,
for this video
that's
game.
cool.
I just, yeah, I still a huge fan of Pat Metheny, but that feeling of being in the same room with a sound that I felt like I knew really well, and the difference, it's like that. Similar to the feeling I was talking to you about earlier, with my mom of just like that something that just kind of gets inside of you in a way that just it's hard to explain what that is, but it's like you feel it in your stomach almost, yeah, I'll never forget that one.
The beginning of my pandemic experience in January 2020 was l moving to Lee Summit, Missouri, which is the hometown of Pat Metheny.
Really?
Yeah, that's
Oh,
where I live. So,
wow.
yeah,
Gee.
they got a big sign up there by the train station and all of
A
that.
big
So,
sign. That's cool.
yeah,
Oh,
so
that's awesome. So people
we're all.
really know who he is out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's still like his brother Mike still lives out there. I went to school with Mike. I
Nice.
was in when I was in a journalism class at
Cool.
UMKC. He was,
Wow.
and I didn't really listen to jazz, so we shook hands and he said, "Hey, my name's Mike." And then he looked over and he said, "Mike Matheny," and he's waiting for it. I'm like, "Cool, man." And he was like, "My big brother's kind of famous," and I was like, "Oh, that's cool." And then we just went along with it. So.
Wow,
But he's a
nice.
flugelhorn player. He has albums out. He's pretty
Holy.
established. And yeah, so.
He's on some of those Pat Metheny group recordings, isn't
Yeah,
he?
probably so. And during the pandemic, there was a book that was released by Carolyn Glenn Brewer. She's a local author. Her husband's a bass player. She wrote about his Kansas City time. And I don't even know how he went to high school. He was so active. And all of the cats here that are like the elders, so to speak, they all remember gigging with him and how active, and they all knew that he was on this track to something bigger and better. So
Yeah.
it's pretty cool. I could probably compile a book of stories that I hear when I tell people I'm from Lee Summit. There's so many great Pat Metheny stories that are out there, just volumes. So, but I love that story of you turning down the video game and playing the album. That is totally hip. I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not all that dissimilar to what we were talking about before, with the narrative element with music, that it can sort of like speak into all these different things. I mean, even somehow be the correct choice for playing a video game, I think it's that's sort of my I don't know. I mean, the experience of art is it meets you where you are. You can be like a kid playing a video game, or you can, be at the Museum of Modern Art and, be taking it really seriously and everything in between. And the art can be the same, but your experience of it is mostly just based on who you are and what's happening in your life like that day, but and I think, it's like with this record in particular, I think I've never really had that kind of an experience of just it being this like long, expansive thing. But yeah, it speaks into a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So the one thing that's beautiful about being a musician in this world is that it's full of dreams. And you come from Dallas, then you find your way to New York. What was the stage that you finally played on when you got to the Mecca of jazz in New York, where you were like, "Wow, I can't believe this is happening"? Did you have a moment like that?
I think the first one that happened was at the 55 bar, because I just, that place. I remember the first time I took a friend of mine and his girlfriend to the 55. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think the first time I went to the 55, I was like 13 or 14. And I just, there was just something about that place, that just immediately I was just like, oh, this is somehow like, I think kind of, you know, like Smalls is right over there and the Vanguard and the 55 is sort of like right in between. And I feel like it also just kind of like straddled the line, musically or maybe with its place in the scene or whatever too, in that regard. Like it's not like fully or wasn't fully like a jazz with a capital J club, you know, and it was serious, but not like, you know, people would still talk and you know, I don't know. There was something about it that I felt like I really related to in this sort of like raw, gritty thing that was happening there. But I do remember the first time that I brought somebody there, that wasn't a musician with his girlfriend. And then I was, you know, I'd been talking it up and they walked in and they were just like, are you sure we're at the right place? But I got to play there, I think for the first time, maybe like 4 or 5 months after I first moved to New York. That was definitely, yeah, I'll never forget that one. But yeah, I mean, a few of those. I mean, yeah. Did you ask specifically about New York? I can't
No,
remember.
well, yeah, but I mean, yeah, pretty much because that's the thing, that's the Mecca, so to speak, for
I
sure.
mean, the other one for me, which was also pretty early on, I got to play at the Montreux Festival, and that was like when I was, my dad went there. I think that was maybe the year I was born, and got to hear Miles Davis play there. And there's this poster that I found in our attic, that I like got framed and like put on my like childhood bedroom wall. And so going there, that was another one. You know, it was just like, oh, you know, I grew up imagining what this would be like, and then you know, getting to play there, felt really special, but. But yeah, I don't know. It's again, kind of going back to what we were talking about before. I think after the pandemic, I just feel anytime I get to play, I feel so grateful. You know, it kind of doesn't matter where it is, and I think it's a big part of the reason why I still live in New York. It's just there's a real. Maybe I just didn't really quite understand it, I think, when I first moved here, but there's a real sense of general gratitude anytime you get to play here. You know, everybody takes it really seriously and cares, even if they don't even know what the gig pays, you know? So, those are really special ones, but it's all special.
So let me ask you this, Luca. At the end of the day, everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the band stand with you, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Oh, wow. oh boy, if it's my band, I mean, I think, well, maybe another reason also that I still live in New York. I remember there's a bass player named Joe Martin, who's kind of a stalwart dude on the scene. He's in like Mark Turr's band, Chris Potter's band, and has been here since the 90s and has, you know, played with like all my heroes to teach his son piano lessons. So I got to know him pretty well during that time. Oftentimes after the lesson, I would stay and hang and talk with him. And one time we were talking about, well, I, he had essentially been in town for a little while, which usually he wasn't. Like I'd seen him like 2 or 3 weeks in a row. And I was like, oh man, it's so nice you're in town, and you know, being here, you know, you're with your family, and so on and so forth. And he just told me like, yeah man, I wish I was playing more. And it really kind of struck me, you know, that, you know, I thought of it as being nice, you know, that he was there, and he was like, oh, I kind of wish I was on the road. And I know, I mean, I asked him about it, that it didn't have anything to do specifically with his family. But he was like, you know, if you can do your thing on the side of a mountain somewhere by yourself, then you should do that, you know. But if you're the kind of artist and musician that you sort of like need the energy and inspiration of other people, then you should live in New York. And I think that's like, I'm working on this new music right now. That I think has again some kind of spiritual kinship to the record that I just put out, but sort of the idea of it is it's like this long form thing, but my hope is that I can bring it to like different rhythm sections. It's like trio music primarily, but I've also done it quartet, and that I can give it to different folks, and we can sort of like get in a space that I think is sort of like representative of me, but hopefully just invites folks in to do their thing. And so I think I would hope, at least as a band leader, that that's folks' perception of me, because I think that's what I look for in band leaders myself. I hope that people call me to play the way that I play, and do it the way that I like, or I hear it, or I feel, even in relation to their thing. I mean, as a sideman, I always want to serve the vision of the band leader and composer, but I also think, that's sort of like the spirit of this music, is kind of like having a perspective, having a way that you do it, and that's celebrated in some way. So like, for instance, this new music, I just played some of it in Europe twice with two different bands. And it was to the point that like there were certain songs, I would kind of explain what was going on, but we'd get to them. And the idea is that you don't stop in between each one of the pieces. You just kind of play the whole thing straight through. We would get to some of the sections, and the grooves would be different. Like the way that the drummer would interpret the song would just be like, it would almost be like a different song entirely, And I've been in bands where that's something like that happens, and like the music stops and the band leader has to, I hope that folks' perception of me is the antithesis of that I welcome, other perspectives.
For sure. So Echoes is the new album. If anybody wants to get a copy, is Bandcamp the best place?
Yeah,
Okay.
that would definitely be the best place.
And then live shows. Anything else going on in your world? Where do people go to find out?
To lukemorantz.com.
Okay. I will put all these links in the show notes. Luke, this has been great. Thank you so much. Great to meet you. Best of luck on the
Likewise, Joe.
release. Yeah.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Brooklyn, Dallas, Boston, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Luke for his time and story. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.